Bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for your ears. We are The Pocket Show, and we are here to discuss everything that goes into your pocket within reason. Of course, we're here to talk about mobile phones, and I have a fantastic panel. We've got a newbie to the British Tech Network. We have an old favourite to the British Tech Network, and then we also have Alison as well. So it's going to be a good laugh. I'm looking forward to this evening. So I'll just run round. So first of all, to my immediate right, we have James Hart. How are you this evening, sir?
I don't know which way you're facing. I must be west. Hello. Yeah, I'm okay. Thank you. Yes. Yes, it's too early for a beer, but too late for dinner. I don't know how that works.
Well, it's always mojito time somewhere. Surely.
True.
And beside him,
please don't call me Shirley.
And beside him is Alison Sheridan of the NosillaCast Mac podcast. How are you this evening, Alison?
I'm doing great. I've been looking forward to this ever since we were drinking at the Chieftain at Macworld.
Yeah.
I think that's when I agreed to do something silly like this, right?
Yeah, it probably is. Yeah, that was it. That was a good night. It was a good place. And I can't believe it's been 3 weeks since Macworld.
Yeah. I started with a cold at Macworld and I got another one already. Go figure.
Really? Right, full circle. At least you can't blame Macworld for that one as well. Or did you go to Macworld with a cold?
No, I brought it to Macworld. I decided to be patient zero this year.
All right. Okay. That was very kind of you. I was warned that I was going to get a cold. And so when I came back from Macworld, I wasn't going anywhere near my six-month-old baby and things like that. Oh my goodness. Oh. No, you'll come back with some kind of weird foreign bug.
Plague.
Yeah.
Well, it's so funny. When you tell people you have a cold, they look at you like you have bubonic plague. It's like, I have the sniffles, dude.
And there's so much hugging at Macworld as well. It's
a lot of hugging this year. Yeah.
Oh, is that new?
Well, that'll be how the colds get passed on.
Oh my god, I think it's
worse.
And also we have, as I said, a newbie at the British Tech Network, never been on our shows before, probably won't be on ever again after this. His choice, not ours. Well, it's Chris Ashley of the SMR podcast. How are you this evening, sir?
I'm doing fantastic. Thank you very much for having me. Any chance I get to talk about my love for Windows Phone and other tech, I'm on it. So thank you for having me.
No worries. It's a pleasure.
What up, Chris?
What up, Allison? One of my favorite human beings on Earth.
So you're the one.
Yes, only Earth though, not the moon.
He's certainly the only one who's not got a cold.
Well, I'm not going to Mac shows, and I'm not definitely not hugging a bunch of Apple fans. No, I'm just kidding.
Did you go build or anything like that?
All that hugging sounds like more of like a support group, not a Mac technology show.
I'm sorry, it is a support group. Yeah.
I found it all very strange being British and hugging. It's a sort of a gentlemanly tip of the hat, or perhaps a handshake if you know them quite well. And this whole hugging.
Wash your hands afterwards.
Oh yeah.
Well, is the hugging, is it the one arm in and then the other arm around the back hugging, or is it that full on, you know, come on in here hugging? That's what I need to understand.
Oh no, it was full on hugging. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
not a manly Christian kind of hug. Side hug. My wife is so British, she carries around a bottle of that hand wipe stuff, wash to disinfect her hands before she takes hands with somebody.
Oh wow, good for her.
Actually, tell her a little trick I learned. I realized you could fake this. At Macworld, I'd walk up to people, they'd introduce themselves, and I would say, I have a cold, so I'll give you my elbow. And they were so happy about the elbow. She could just do that. Just pretend she has a cold. They'll never know. What do you think?
Top tips for everybody.
tips out early.
I've discovered if the hug lasts too long as well, just take your hand and just place it in the back of their head. That stops the hug quite quickly.
Oh, that's seriously creepy.
You got to add a gazing look into the eye. Start singing a little bit. You'll never find.
It's the pelvic thrust. The pelvic thrust, Minj.
Is this a Mac
show? I am never going to a Mac show. It's a British Tech Hug Show.
Indeed.
I want to go.
So we're all here to talk about mobile news. So we will push straight on into the headlines. So the first thing I'm going to mention, and we're going to talk about a little bit deeper on in the show, but of course, Windows Phone 8.1 Developer Preview is now available to download. And now in previous shows, we've covered what was going to be an 8.1. So things like Cortana, the digital assistant, and things like that. But we're going to leave that for later on because Chris wants to talk a little bit further about that. But also on Friday, the Wall Street Journal reported that Amazon may launch a smartphone in September, but we've heard this before, but with 3D capabilities. The report claims that Amazon have been showing off the device to developers in San Francisco and Seattle in recent weeks and might be ready to announce in late June for a September release.
What do we think? Look for someone with cross eyes.
Why? Why would... I thought we were done with 3D. I thought we already decided we hate it.
Yeah, I this seems very, very strange. The description in the Wall Street Journal article that mentioned this kind of describes it somewhere like the Nintendo 3DS 3D, except it seems to be popping out more like a hologram. I don't know. I
don't know. Has 3D even has it really taken off beyond the movie theaters?
No, I don't think so.
I don't think so because I mean I went and bought a 3D TV, but I'll be honest, it's pretty cool having it. But I can't even name one movie that I've actually watched while using it. So I just bought it to have.
And surely the whole point of 3D is so that they can sort of point things at your face and scare the living daylights out. You don't want your phone doing that.
It does possibly give a little bit of a use to the so you could have like a digital assistant like Leia, and she kind of can pop out your phone as a hologram, you know.
That may be one. So on. If Cortana did that, I'd welcome
to
that.
Hug over me.
Yeah, would you hug Cortana if she did that? That's the real question.
My wife already said that she's better than her. So if my wife can say that, then I've got no problems. But yeah, I don't know. I'm actually, you know, we've heard, like you mentioned, we've heard a lot of the Amazon phone. I'm very surprised that they're still going ahead with this. I was actually surprised that, you know, they announced their Fire TV because I don't necessarily see how they're going to nudge their way into the market with all the available Google has, Apple has the Apple TV. You can do stuff on the Xbox. You can do stuff on the PlayStation. All these guys have apps that are somewhat cross-platform, and then you slam in yet another player to the game. So I was surprised with Fire TV, but I'm still even surprised with the Amazon phone, simply because if you look at what Mozilla came out with, it it doesn't seem to have gone that far yet. And with what Samsung is decimating everybody as far as selling phones, and then you have iPhone definitely doing work to everybody else, I'd be interested to see what Amazon thinks they can bring to the table that's going to turn the dial there.
See, I think that they've got the opportunity with the Kindle brand, though. If you take your kind of mom and pop type people who don't really know about iPhone, they don't know about Samsung, they don't know about all this stuff that's going on, and they just go in looking for a phone. They've heard of iPhone, they've possibly heard of Android, but they'll definitely have heard of Amazon, and they will surely have heard of Kindle. So I think they've got some kind of a marketing hook there, definitely, for going with a Kindle phone.
Yeah, I agree with you to an extent, but I don't believe nowadays that most people are going in, and I think there's plenty of them going in asking for Android, but I think a lot of them are now going in and just asking for the new Samsung, whatever, you know. So they're just not associating Android to Samsung. I've went into my local AT&T store and just have watched this take place, and I just hear people asking for the latest Galaxy, you know. And yeah, it doesn't matter that it's running Android. So it's that Galaxy name is what I'm talking about when I mentioned Samsung. So I agree with you. Kindle does have some recognition, but you know, from a reading standpoint and from a it's going to be tough to, I think, for them to translate that into the phone world.
Well, The USP with Amazon is ostensibly they're a company that sells stuff. They sell video products, they sell audio, they sell books occasionally as well. And so what they're trying to do, I guess, is trying to get their brand out very much like Apple has their own kind of ecosystem.
Sure.
Amazon has their, and you know, when you buy an Amazon device, it doesn't have the Google Play Store, it has the Amazon Store. However, what they haven't kind of figured is the fact you can get the Amazon Store on your Android and your Apple device. So there's no exclusivity, and therefore there's nothing really driving people, unless they can get the content out exclusively to the Amazon products. People are going to be able to do the more versatile thing, which is the sort of the Androids and the Apples and the Microsofts that can do Amazon Plus, if you see. Mm-hmm. I don't know how they're trying to angle themselves into that.
Yeah. I think another element over the top of that is that Amazon's happy to lose money. And, you know, this phone could come out for...
That's an interesting point.
Yeah, free with a bag of chips type thing, you know.
Right, true. Yeah, true that. But yeah, I think I would.
I like where James is going with that, because it's where does the money come from, right? I mean, the Kindle doesn't cost enough money, you know, the straight up Kindle. But I have paid for more books in the last 2 years than I have in my lifetime. It's a pile of money for them is all that thing is, and it works great for them.
Right.
So maybe they don't have to make a lot of money on the device, just more ways to get you in. But what I keep looking at is, you know who the sneak winner of all of this is? It's got to be Netflix, because every single device comes out. Yeah, Netflix is on that. Yeah, Netflix. I'll be on that. I'll be on that. Everybody's like, oh, I got to make a box, and Netflix like, I'll be on that.
Yeah.
And good for Netflix for doing that too, because you know, one thing I've talked about for years and years, and you know, certainly coming from a Windows Phone standpoint, you look at some of the apps that have come out on the Android and iPhone, and then you're just like, okay, guys, if you want this to be successful in any shape or form, it should be on every platform. And Netflix does not play around. You come out with something that, you know, you can come out with a pencil and there's going to be Netflix on that pencil. They're not messing around.
My friend offered me a movie this morning. You know?
I love them for that.
Yeah. Epic co-founder and CEO Tim Sweeney told Epic forum readers that they are currently working on the Unreal Engine 4 for mobile platforms. However, he did follow that up with, we're a very long way away from having a ship quality implementation. Right now, our mobile efforts are really focused on iOS, Android, based on their huge market shares, and we have a lot of work to do on these platforms before expanding to the mobile platforms such as Windows Phone. Are you a big gamer, Chris? Is this good news to you, or is it sort of...
I am a huge gamer, and it's definitely good news to me, because I would love to see more. It's one of the empty promises we've gotten from Microsoft, which is the gaming tie-in from Xbox to Windows Phone. I've had every Xbox that's ever existed. I was on Xbox Live before it was even launched publicly. I'm definitely into it, and I'm slightly disappointed to the fact that you know, some of these awesome games that you find on Android and iOS, you just don't see on Windows Phone. Not that it's a big deal to me where I would make that the, okay, you can't get this phone. But, as a gamer, I would love to see these. So with a lot of games running on that Unreal Engine, I'm happy to see that they're considering to bring it to Windows Phone and they're going to do it. I understand bringing it to iOS and Android first, and it's something that I think Microsoft will continue to work on, which is to make it easier for when people drop these things that they can drop it all at the same time, because it's up to them to make sure they provide everything possible to make that happen. So, yeah. You definitely – that engine is going to be great, because a lot of games run that on the Unreal Engine platform.
Are we in the FPS? Are we there with FPSs on mobile devices yet? I mean, from what I understand, we're still kind of one thumb at one corner of the screen, another thumb at the other corner of the screen. Is it a gaming machine yet? Can we do what we can do on a PC or a Mac?
No, I'm not good. I wouldn't go that far. But what it is a time passer buyer. You know, so if you're ever in your local DMV and you need to do something while you're waiting in line for the next 2 hours, or wherever you may be waiting. Yeah. You know, some people like to read books. some people like to check email for work. You know, other people like to game. And that's where I'm at. You know, I'll grab a game and play that for an hour or so without issue, as opposed to reading anybody's book.
See, I don't want to drift down too much into this gaming angle here, but I'm a big gamer, but I don't find the Unreal games that palatable on on touchscreen devices. I was quite interested in the game controllers that came out, although I haven't managed to pick one up yet for iOS. But I prefer your sort of puzzly games if I'm going to just pass by the time, maybe a Plants vs. Zombies type thing. Mm-hmm. But like Infinity Blade, I'm sure that was the Unreal Engine. That just I picked it up and I just thought, this just isn't working for me. I don't like, you know, two-thirds of the screen kind of taking me. Okay, maybe I've got big thumbs, but, you know, a reasonable proportion of the screen taken up with my thumbs. But
let me ask you this. Were you, and you could tell me the truth. Were you comparing it to a regular gaming experience, or were you playing it for what it was, a game that's popular on a mobile phone?
You know, that's a good question. I'm not really sure what the answer is to that. I think I'm not... You've stumped me that one there. I don't know what I went into it thinking. I think I went into it because there was so much of a build-up behind it. You know, they always, Apple always kind of bring these, the Infinity Blade guys out, the keynotes. You think, wow, that looks incredible. But of course it looks incredible. It's on a, 7-foot screen up, or probably bigger than that, 20-foot screen up behind them. And then when I get it, I'm like, oh, I'm a little bit disappointed with this. So maybe you're right. Maybe I was looking at it in the wrong angle. But I still think there's a long way to go for that level of gaming.
Yeah, I honestly thought you were going to ask him, you can be straight with me, were you just trying to play it one-handed?
I thought there was going to be something like you were sitting in the toilet doing it or something. That was where we were going.
You just ruined my follow-up question.
I mean, come on, clean it up, boys.
You know me 5 minutes and you're already picking my brain. No, the reason why is because I do the same thing. I'll grab something and I'll have all this built-up excitement from other people and from the news reports, and I'll grab it and I'm like, this is just not what I expected. But, I've trained myself to kind of go through that period of realigning myself to what my expectations should be. Should I be disappointed? Okay, yeah, this part of the game sucks, or this part of whatever I'm using sucks, and here's why. Or, well, hey, man, this is not a controller. This is not, you got to get used to it this way. You know what I mean? So that's why I was asking, because it's something I've kind of caught myself doing, and I just wonder if anybody else had the same experience as I did.
I have to say, the only place I love car racing games. I'm not very good at them, but I love car racing games. The only time I play car racing games is on my phone for two reasons. One, I can't get close enough to the telly at any time because either the kids or my wife want to watch something. And two, I really do enjoy the experience. The screen's big enough, the detail's good enough, and actually the gameplay is pretty much exactly, once you've got a hand of it, it's equivalent to playing on a... You don't have a wheel, obviously, but it's not far off. It's not far off.
Yeah, especially with the accelerometer, it makes it easier to steer and so you're not worried too much about the controls on the screen, so they can take up less space. Yeah, I agree with you. They tend to be very good on a phone. Mm. But
The Guardian reports that the Facebook app could be causing iPhone battery woes, particularly the background app refresh and location services, according to an ex-Apple Genius Bar employee, Scott Lovelace. It's an awesome last name.
I saw that, and I had to ask you guys one question before you even answer this.
Yep.
Why is that news, and why is that in a news report on The Guardian, that Apple battery life? Somebody's going to have to help me out with that one.
No. Let me do this one. Okay. I love this one. So I've actually been talking to the guy that wrote the article. What's significant about this is that it's written by a guy who was an Apple genius, and through his work experience, he developed a set of rules to try to figure out why somebody's battery was having problems. So, Apple employees never say anything. So that's probably what made it get a little bit more attention. But what's just so awesome about the article is it's got like five things you can check. And number one is shut off background app refresh from Facebook. So I think people knew this already, that I've seen reports on how many megabytes per hour it downloads. I don't think that was actually news. But to have someone who used to represent Apple saying it out loud, saying the very first thing you have to do is this. The article also goes through some really cool stuff. Like it explains that there's a metric under usage that has standby. Wait, I got to make sure I say it right. Let me bring it up real quick. Basically, it's the difference between how much active use you actually have and how much standby use you have. And they should be two very different numbers. Mm-hmm. So there's usage and standby. And he says if those two numbers are the same, you do have a battery drain issue going on. I happen to have that situation, and I've gone through every one of his steps, and I have not been able to determine what it is.
I work on the principle, if you pick up the phone off the desk and it's warm, there's something wrong.
That's one of them. He does have that in there. But for some reason, the Facebook app itself is worse than all the others. But there are a bunch of other apps that they say, you know, if you have background app refresh on other apps, you might want to shut that off and see if it helps. What I also like about his article is he starts with, no, I'm not going to tell you to shut off everything that's fun on your phone, you know, because usually the battery, those battery things start with, okay, turn your screen down so you can't see it, you know, shut off email, never tweet or text, make sure you have cellular off and Wi-Fi off. We'll let you have GPS, but only for a little while. It's like, okay, then I don't need a phone. It's called a brick.
Yeah, get a pen and paper. Yeah.
So, by the way, this is a big issue for iOS then. A lot of people having battery drain problems.
Yeah, definitely. I've experienced it quite a bit recently.
I don't know if I would say it's a lot, though. He's going to take that as meaning 85% of people using iPhones have battery issues. So you got to watch it.
I was thinking 83, Allison, not 85.
I mean, in fairness, the iPhone's battery is physically smaller in terms of amps than you know, most other kind of flagship phones in the same market.
But there is a difference going on here, because Steve, like, he'll open up his iPhone 5S and he'll look for something and he'll set his phone down and leave it on. And if I do that, my battery will be gone in a couple minutes. And I'm lying, but very, very quickly, it'll start to drain. I'm like meticulous about always shutting it off and everything. And he doesn't bother at all. And his battery lasts probably twice as long as mine. So he's got the same, should have the same battery issues as me, but I've got something going wrong. And that's what I got to dig into and find out.
Yeah, I think, carry on, James.
I was going to say, I think everybody who has had a smartphone, and I've had smartphones of every single type, will look at their battery and go, hang on a minute, it was like 85% 20 minutes. What has happened in the last half an hour to make it go down to 46%? It's happened to everybody. Everybody has that experience. Yes. Now, there must be something going on in the background that the operating system doesn't quite have control over.
Mm-hmm. But it's not everybody. So these are what's cool about this article is it's very specific. It says do this, do this, do this, do this. And if you get to the end of this, then you should take your phone to the Apple Genius because something else is wrong. Mm-hmm.
Good for him for writing it out like that, because the first thing I do is try to level set people. I have folks in my life that I move over to smartphones. In fact, I'm notorious for giving away my old smartphones to family members because I upgrade probably 3 times a year. But the first thing I try to do is level set them into battery life. It's like, are you really having an issue? So, and that is, I can't get till 6 o'clock. Well, you're using a computer. 6 o'clock is good. But, if you can't get to noon, then we got to look and see what apps are running in the background. So, but I guess did this problem start happening more recently? Because I've never really heard the most of the times, Allison, you and I have had this conversation many times, is the battery life seems to be pretty good generally on iOS devices. So is this maybe a new update that took place or
I think it must have been. I mean, personally, I found it considerably worse just over the course of the last maybe 6 weeks, 6 to 8 weeks, to the point that I had, and it's ridiculous that it doesn't bother me this, but I now carry around a backup battery for my phone permanently, no matter what. And it actually, the other day it was relatively warm, possibly not warm for you, Alison, but warm for me, and being in Scotland, that meant it was, it maybe breached 8 degrees, see? So I decided to go outside without a jacket on, and that actually caused me quite a bit of an issue because I had nowhere to put an external battery for my phone. So I realized that's a bigger problem that I need to go and speak to somebody about, but I maybe should just not deal with that if it's a nice sunny day. But I've noticed it quite a bit recently that I have to carry this external battery. And so I tried this when I was reading this article I put in the doc yesterday. And I actually uninstalled Facebook entirely just as a complete test to see what happened. And I noticed today my battery is considerably better.
Oh, interesting. Maybe getting rid of Facebook as just a general policy is a good idea.
Yeah, it's definitely a bit of a drain on my life. I never post on it. All I do is just kind of read what other people are doing. It's like a book. Yeah.
It's somewhat notable that for my company and a number of companies I work for, the on-call phone is always a crappy Nokia phone because they last for like 6 days without a charge.
Yeah. You know, when I was in New Zealand and I couldn't use Wi-Fi and I couldn't use cellular and I couldn't use maps, my iPad lasted 3.5 weeks. Oh, and I couldn't download any podcasts. So it was amazing.
I suppose the answer is to all this. If your Facebook app is causing a problem, uninstall it and use the web app. There you go. That's a solution for you.
Really, you should definitely check out that article, though, since lays it out very well.
And there are other things. Mm-hmm. There's more to it than just the background apps and more than just Facebook. He goes through one of the things that really struck me that was interesting was he said, stop throwing apps away. Like, it's real fun to open up the fast app switcher thing, whatever they call it, and fling them away. He said you're actually wasting energy if you're doing that, because you're taking it out of RAM where it wasn't doing anything. It wasn't draining your battery at all, but now you're making it go reaccess that information when it comes back, if you go back to that app.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, he said that's not going to make your battery drain by 50% or anything, but it is something not to do.
Definitely something to look up. Definitely something to look up.
He talks about push email, too. All right, I'll stop talking about it. I was excited about that. Plus, the guy was cool. He responded to me a bunch. And by the way, now he has me working in Xcode and looking at instrument detail, and I have no idea what I'm doing. It's really fun.
Sorry, Chris, carry on.
No, I was just saying that's where Allison loves to be. It's deep in that, and deep in some kind of crazy trail. I'm the
Nerd
same
feel.
Way. Yes.
If your Android device is running version 4.1.1, you might want to have a look at an update. As Google explained in a blog post, that this is the only version of Android that could have the Heartbleed flaw. Microsoft has come out and said that no versions of Windows Phone have any Heartbleed things, and Apple are yet to respond on that. However, Mark Rogers, Principal Security Research at the San Francisco-based Lookout Incorporated, explained that there are no signs that hackers are trying to attack Android devices through the vulnerability, as it would be complicated to set up and the success rate would be low. Individual devices are less attractive because they need to be targeted one by one. Now, I didn't just put this in here for clickbait because Heartbleed's something that everybody's talking to, but I wanted to mention Heartbleed. I think it's something that people should be aware of, and they should look into it. It's not a panic. Or it doesn't need to be, but heartbleed.com is possibly the first place to start because it's got a few questions on there.
So on my show yesterday, that published yesterday, Bart Bouchatz is a security expert that I rely on, and he explained something I hadn't realized till he brought it up, was that Heartbleed is actually bidirectional. That I thought it was just Heartbleed on web servers that had used the open SSL port, and that was why, you know, all the web servers had to be updated. But he explained that it actually was bidirectional, so you could have it on your device, on your Mac, on your PC, on your wherever, and that it was only 4.1.1. But that is one of the jelly beans, I think. There's a lot of jelly beans, but it's one of them.
Well, the article did say that this is less than 10% of the Android user base, which is, I mean, the way it was worded was like, it's only less than 10%, but that's substantial considering there's, 90 million devices or something?
Yeah, since hardly anybody's gone to KitKat yet, Jelly Bean is the biggest one, but it depends on which of the jelly beans. And if you had 4.1.1, can you even update?
Yeah, so you get into that whole Android issue of does it work with your provider and all that kind of stuff, your cellular?
So the providers could push it out to everybody. That would, you know, just slap a 4.1.2 on everybody and move along.
That's not going to happen. they got to test it and retest it and lay it on the ground and test it again and sleep on it and, you know.
Then give it to the carrier.
Yeah, and then give it to the carrier, and then the carrier does all that again. What I found interesting is that the fact that this thing existed for a while, and hackers were definitely already using it.
Well,
before it came out that this existed, I found that to be kind of scary.
I can't remember where I read it now, so this what I'm about to say is with absolutely no source whatsoever. I definitely read somewhere that there was absolutely no evidence that anybody had actually done anything with this vulnerability prior. I wish I could remember where I'd read that now and I could actually see some kind of a source, but
yeah, good. Well, that makes me feel better then, because I was reading some unnamed source that said it existed out there and it was used.
It definitely did. So the source, I want to say it was Steve Gibson, but that might be complete nonsense. I might just be trying to put a name in front of what I've just said to try and make it sound a bit more impressive. It was something like that. And they did say, yes, it has been out for a while. I think it was March 2012. They reckon it originally appeared, but we didn't find out about it until last week, last Tuesday or something. But there was no evidence to say that anybody had done anything bad with it since. But I'll see if I can find it during the rest of the show, and if I can find the article, I will I will mention it later on.
Don't worry about it. We're just having fun.
It would be interesting, though. I think this whole Heartbleed thing, it's kind of going off the original point with Google and stuff, but this whole Heartbleed thing is it's very interesting because it's your muggles, if you will, actually know about it now.
Right, you know, it's everywhere.
It was on Tin Pot Local
It's been
radio
on the news. Yeah. It's been on your local news and everything. People are still none the wiser about it, except for the fact that they sort of change your password, then don't change your password, then change your password again.
Mm. Oh, yeah. That's a problem. It's just made everybody scared.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So there was one bit of news I heard on macOS Ken that I thought was really cool. Usually when something like this happens, your antivirus companies or whatever, you know, start going, hey, you should have been using us, this kind of thing. 1Password from AgileBits actually cut their price in half right now.
Yeah.
To try to convince people, hey, you really should have a password manager. Now, I don't happen to even use 1Password. I use LastPass, but I thought that was pretty cool. I thought it was really, really neat. For anybody who doesn't know, that's a password manager for the Mac and iOS.
Mm-hmm. I also use LastPass, and they've been really, really cool about the whole thing as well. They came out, I think it was on Thursday last week, and they give you a list of all the websites that you should be actually going to deal with and change your password on. Both of those services have been, tip of the hat to them, they've been very good in this whole.
Yeah, I love the fact when these folks get proactive and they send you emails about these big security things that are going on. They let you know how they're affected. Even when you had the big Target breach, I started getting emails from different vendors, different credit card companies saying, hey, this is where we're at. This is how we could be affected. And I love that proactive nature instead of hiding and, crossing fingers and hoping for the best.
Yeah. It's got positive and negatives, though, because I've had 3 emails from companies I forgot I'd signed up to tell me to change your password. And so I went and closed my accounts because I didn't use them anymore.
Oh, I'll change my password. I'll change it to non-existent. See you later.
Yeah, I wish that actually did exist. Does it? I mean, because so many of these sites, I'm like, oh, look, I haven't used your service in 12 years, but I still had to go in and change my password.
Yeah. No, I mean, 3 companies. I forget where they were off the top of my head, but 3 companies emailed me and said that I had to go and change my password. One of them was TD Waterhouse, but that's the only one I can remember. Another one, but the other two, I don't recall. But that was quite handy. But there should be something like that. There should be some way. And I suppose you can do it with LastPass, because LastPass always captures everything for it to say that you've not used this in so long. I wonder if there's actually an element of LastPass that does that.
I'm actually looking to see, because they have the security check. I wonder if they added Heartbleed to the security check.
They did, Chris. It's so cool. So you go into the, you turn on, they call it the security challenge, which is pretty fun. It goes through your passwords and says how many of them you have are duplicated and things like that, and how many you have them are stupid. So the first time I ran it, after I got a couple hundred in there, it came back. I had like 23% rating, something like that, when you want 100. So over the years, I've been fixing them up, and I think I'm up to 75%. But underneath that, now they have a thing that shows you the sites that you have passwords to, and it tells you whether you should upgrade your password now or whether you should wait. So it's got out of 303, I only had about 15 that were affected, and about a quarter of them said, do it now. The other said wait. So I keep going in every couple of days and fixing up my password. Yep. So it made it easy to understand and very manageable for me. So I'm a huge fan of LastPass.
Yeah, there it is right there. I just logged in and started the challenge, and it says the last option added was check your vault for Heartbleed vulnerable sites. So people don't know what we're talking about. LastPass is a password vault where you can – it stores all your passwords for you, so all you have to do is remember the 1Password it takes to log into LastPass, and then LastPass will remember your passwords for all your different sites. It's completely encrypted. They have no access to it. You can get it through your mobile device. You can get it on your different computers. And the great thing about it is, for me at least, and actually for everybody, is it then allows you to have more complicated passwords, because you never have to remember what those passwords are. You can either copy and paste it in. So one of the services they provide as part of the application is to go through all your passwords and see which one of them, as Allison said, are stupid. Love my cat and, hate my dog or whatever, and you let you know that you need to update these passwords, as well as now they're checking for the Heartbleed vulnerable sites that you may have a password
to.
So that's very good.
And this is a tool that runs in your web browser, so it'll run on the Mac, Windows, Linux, absolutely everywhere. It has plugins, so you can log in to LastPass, and then when you get to a site and it asks you to create a password, you push a button, it goes, yeah, here's my password, and it generates some long, goofy password you could never hope to remember. And again, like Chris said, you never have to remember it. If you just use those features, it's absolutely free, and all the passwords are stored encrypted on your machine. They are never unencrypted at LastPass. Site. So LastPass themselves had the OpenSSL bug for that Heartbleed thing, but there was no way they could ever get to your passwords because they don't exist there unencrypted. So they couldn't have been vulnerable. So it's a really cool service. If you buy, I think it's $12 a year, you can get the browser on your phone, which is really essential because now you go to a site and you've got no chance of figuring out what your password is. You can go into your vault from your phone.
Yeah. And the other thing is LastPass does two-factor authentication if you want as well, which is very handy. Apple has banned Bloom FM, a UK-based music streaming service available on iOS and Android, from advertising on iAds, as they are a competitive service to iTunes Radio. The news came from Bloom's Twitter account last Wednesday. Now, as we know, iTunes Radio is not available in the UK yet. It's only US and Australia. But does this move suggest an imminent arrival? So, Alison, do you use iTunes Radio at all?
I don't listen to music.
At all? Really?
Did you see the article that came out about a month ago about this this syndrome they discovered where between 1% and 3% of people are apathetic to music? Right. I believe I have this syndrome. I just don't care. It doesn't bother me. I don't find it necessarily unpleasant or anything. I just don't listen to music.
Well, that's the Pocket Podcast, the musical, out of the window then, isn't it?
I mean, I was in band and orchestra and marching band and everything all through high school, and I played every note right when they told me to play it. I played it as loud as they said to play it. I played it as long as they said to play it. But they told me that wasn't actually considered music.
Right, okay. Okay, fair enough.
And my brother's a professor at the Berklee School of Music, which is even more sad. Don't tell him. He doesn't know.
Well, I'm looking forward to this. I really like music. I can't concentrate without music playing.
That's the worst. I cannot have music on.
All right. Well, I can't not have music on. If I'm at work or something like that and I'm working away, I pay attention to everything that's going on around me, and I find it really hard to focus. So I have to put headphones in and put music on for actually focus. So I really like these radio services because I don't necessarily know the song that's coming up. So I don't know the lyrics. So I don't sing along in my head if I don't know the lyrics. So these radio services are superb. And I at the moment, I basically use Spotify just for Spotify Radio. So I'm paying £10 a month for Spotify Radio, which seems a little bit ridiculous, but as soon as iTunes Radio comes along, it's going to be absolutely amazing to me. I'm really looking forward to this.
But are you okay? And I am a music lover, opposite, but we tease Allison all the time about her lack of music interest. But are you okay with the fact that they're banning competitive services, though? I think that's a little
right.
So they're not banning competitive services. They're just banning. Okay, what I'm about to say sounds like I'm justifying it, and I don't think I am because I sort of agree with your point. But they're not banning the service. They're banning the service advertising as part of Apple's advertising network. That's all it is. It's just they're not allowed to advertise on iAds anymore. It's not that they're banning the app.
Oh, okay. So all right. Then that's fine to me. Then as long as they're not saying, okay, we do this now, you're no longer allowed.
It's just advertising.
It still smells wrong, doesn't it?
It does a little bit, yeah. I mean, Bloom have actually been I've quite liked Bloom's Twitter feed since that, because basically they're just kind of going, we're so chuffed that Apple even know who the hell we are. Because they just thought they were this tiny little app sitting somewhere in the back office of a warehouse in London, they're just blown away that they actually knew about them. Which I think is lovely. It kind of gives Bloom a little bit of a little bit of personality. And to be honest, I'd never even heard of this Bloom service, and I've actually went and checked it out now because it looks quite interesting. So they've possibly got more publicity out of taking their publicity away. Interesting. So Because I completely forgot to do the UK 2 ad because we were discussing hugging way back at the beginning there, I'm going to do two ads in a row here. So sincere apologies for listeners. But they are amazing services and we love them and you should know about them. But long-term listeners to the British Tech Network will know about UK 2. They are superb. They provide all the hosting and streaming and everything like that for the British Tech Network. They're absolutely amazing company. I have all of my web services with them as well because I'm not a web developer. I was a web developer at one stage, but I'm not anymore. But I still do a lot of websites and mobile apps and things like that. And I use UK 2 for all of them. If you head on over to the British Tech Network and click on the sponsors link in the top tab and click on UK2 there just so that they know that we sent you. Also on the sponsors link there, you'll see tons of voucher codes, British Tech DNS, British Tech Domains, British Tech VPN, all for some great money off offers from UK2. Absolutely superb. I wholeheartedly recommend them. I've seen Ewan and Charlotte Henry, who's a regular on the big show, chatting about them earlier on. She just had an amazing customer service experience by UK2 today. Great, great guys. So please support them because they support us. I also want to mention the Network Union. They are an authorised BT business partner licensed to resell BT Global and UK services. Even if you're not a BT customer just now, or if you are a BT customer just now, speak to the Network Union. They will basically act as a middleman, but they won't add any fees or margins or anything like that. Your contracts and your support and your billing are still directly with BT. Network Union just kind of become a layer between the two to kind of smooth it all up. A bit of lube between two frictionless areas, if you will. They are superb. They support British Tech and we hope that you support them too. Please head on to the sponsors page on the British Tech Network. Click on the Network Union link so they know we sent you. If you give them your email address, don't worry, they're not going to use that for marketing purposes or anything like that. It's just so they can contact you. That's Network Union and UK2, two amazing sponsors of the British Tech Network. So, anyway, back to our regular scheduled programming. Chris, you wanted to talk about Windows 8.1 that was released today.
All right, so I take it you guys have nothing else to talk about for the rest of the show, and I'm about to take over.
Well, interestingly,
hey, you can have my time slot, Chris.
We had there's a guy named Alan Hauschel who sometimes comes on as the Windows guy on this podcast, and when Windows 8.1 was originally released. Originally announced, he took up a good 20 minutes of the show discussing the features. So feel free to follow.
I'm going to go read a book, Chris.
No, I'm interested to hear about these things. So.
I'm going to be courteous to you guys and the listeners. Windows 8.1, which I'm sure you mentioned earlier, you guys talked about, is actually available for download today for part of the
8.1 update one, or is this just 8.1?
This would just be 8.1 as far as the phone is concerned.
Okay, good.
You jerk.
No. I actually wanted to understand that. I'll tell you when I'm being snotty on purpose.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't want you to tell me. I just want you to do it and let me figure it out. It's more fun that way. But Windows, so it released today as part of the Developers Preview Program. And what this Developers Preview Program is a program that Microsoft put in place that essentially allows enthusiasts to get a hold of the newest version so they don't have to wait for the carriers to, again, lay on it, roll on it, sleep on it, and figure out when they're going to release it to the public. So you can go sign up for this program for free. Once you get in, you install a tiny little app on your phone, and then you just say when they release these updates, you can just hit check for update, and it starts blowing down to your phone. The update took me about 20 minutes to install. It's pretty big. It goes through two cycles, so anybody looking to install it, the first update comes in, and then it updates, and then the second one comes down, and that's the big mamma jamma to get on there. But once you get the update on your phone, I am having an absolute blast messing around with Cortana. It's every bit as cool as you saw on the preview that Microsoft gave during a build. And if you didn't think it was cool, then I don't know what to tell you.
Is it more in line with Google Now, or is it more in line with Apple Siri, or is it something?
It's definitely more in line with Google Now. It's definitely more in line with Google Now. I tell you that the first thing I did was, you have to go and turn it on. It's not on by default, but once you turn it on, it asks you for permission to track your stuff and use that notebook, which is pretty cool. And then it asks you for your interest. So, for example, it says when you look at news the first thing in the morning, what's the first type of news that you look for? And I say sports, which is what I do. And but you can then go back in later and add tech news that you're interested in and world news and all that stuff as well. And then it'll start, you know, fashioning these this information for you. You can also put in other interests like the food you type of eat, what's your hobbies. Do you like to cook? Do you like to sit at home? You know, what do you do after work? So it's kind of interesting, all these different things that it asks you to get to know you better. But, you know, just to test it out, I went and I said, Cortana, remind me to pick up more fruit. And I just assumed that it would just set a reminder to pick up fruit. Mm-hmm. Instead, she asked me, when do you want me to remind you? Which I thought was, I just started smiling. And then I said, well, remind me when I get to the mom store. Now, here in my area, we have a store. It's called Mom, and it's basically an organic store.
Right.
And she responds back, there's a mom store located on such and such address. Is this the one you want? And I said, yeah. She says, okay, I'll set a reminder the next time you go here to pick up fruit. And I now have a reminder on my phone. So when I get there, it'll pop on my phone and say, hey, grab more fruit. I thought that was awesome.
Yeah.
And it's the conversational part of it where, you know, I didn't have to go back and be specific. She asked me when I wanted to be reminded. So I thought that was very cool.
Hey, Chris, can I ask a question on that?
Yeah.
The iPhone can do that. It doesn't ask you that, but you can tell it, you remind me when I get home to do blah, blah, blah.
Sure.
I would say probably 30% of the time as I drive into my driveway, it tells me my alarm. The other 70% of the time, it tells me when I'm a quarter mile away. It never tells me. It waits 3 days to tell me, or it tells me at the wrong place. It seems completely random. Have you actually tested whether it works?
Not yet, but I'll call you
later
and let you know.
Yeah,
because I'm definitely heading there to get some more
you
fruit.
You still haven't got your fruit.
Exactly. I haven't gotten it yet. I need more from my – I've been doing these old kale shake things. I'm sucked in, and they're great. So I need some more raspberries.
Chris, I really hope I'm not going to be steering the podcast into another direction. I've got a Windows phone. Yeah. Yesterday, I read up that it had it. And I got a bit confused. I have no idea how to do that. Where do I find the app? What do I do? Because I have a funny feeling you need a Windows 8 PC to do it.
No, you do not. The first thing I would tell you to do is head over to...
this is exciting.
So the URL is dev.windowsphone.com/en-us/featured/dev-preview.
Or you could just go to app preview.
Okay.
Hold on. It's app. Just go to appstudio.windowsphone.com.
All right. Okay. That's slightly easier.
Yeah.
Right. I've got, hang on. Unfortunately, something's happened and our site is down. Arsenal, right? Is it? Hey, get SDK. Hang on a second. Do it again. Run up by me again, Chris. Sorry.
Yeah.
App Studio. Oh, I did. APP. I had a play with that the other day and it was really fun because I developed a little. Right. I got it. Yep.
Yeah. So once you go in there and you register an account,
which
then,
I've done.
You can now go to the Windows Phone Store, and you should look for an app called the Developer. Let me make sure I get this right. Preview for Developers.
Okay, hang on a second. Let me just go to the Windows. On my phone or on the...
On your phone.
On the
go
phone?
Go to your phone.
On my phone, okay.
And you go to...
What's it called?
Preview for Developers.
Preview for Developers.
This is like having a phone call with my granddad. It's awesome.
I'll tell you what.
Did you reboot? No. Okay, reboot the phone.
Press start.
No, start.
I'm going to have to hang up to do this.
I got to go. Sorry.
Call me in a week and I'll let you know if I've done it before then. I'll tell you what, we'll have to take this offline because this is going to take me bloody weeks. I have a funny feeling I got stuck somewhere. Because I had to click a button that says I will give over my firstborn child to do this. So I'm going to have to – I've probably got it wrong and I shall – can I do it from – oh, no. We'll move on, I think, because I'm very excited about doing it. But clearly, I need an idiot guide. If you can link me to an idiot guide, that would be fantastic.
Yes, there's two guys that are very well written out there. Paul Thurrott wrote one on his OneSuperSite.com.
Okay.
And the big WP Central blog wrote another guide on how to get in. Both of those guys had written some excellent blog posts on how to get the update on your get into the program and get into the update. But it's essential as those three steps: sign up for an app dev account, install the app on the phone, launch the app, go through to accept a couple things, and then check for updates, and it should come in and update on your phone.
Do we need to warn
this
listeners?
Is very
do we need to warn listeners that there's a possibility with downloading this dev preview may void warranties and things like that, or is it?
Absolutely. Yeah. It definitely depends on your carrier and how they want to handle things. I just wouldn't tell them if you have a problem with your phone. But that's just my secret. And he's like, it's not working. Just put a hammer through it and give it back to him.
No way. Opinions of Chris Ashley are not the opinions of British Tech Network. And any complaints should be directed at Big Chris Ashley on Twitter. Thank you. Yeah,
well, this is the point, actually. When I read up on the things, and all the sites were saying, download it. It's really exciting. And it said, don't worry, it's almost the RTM version. And it's going to be pretty much the version. So, you know, what's the risks, and having to wait for your carrier to screw it up is, you know, this phone is only 3 months old. I'm not going to take any unnecessary risks with it. It's like jailbreaking.
So let me explain to you the differences. This is RTM code. This is the final code. The only difference that's going to be between what the carriers push down and this is the carriers will include their firmware updates to the actual device. So this is the OS update, handles the change, right, adding in Cortana and all that stuff. There may be some radio updates. There may be some, you know, how the device handles, you know, certain things on the lower level updates that come in. They may add some of their update to their own applications that they stick onto the phone. That's what comes with the actual final update. And you will get that update as well. So when that update comes out from the carrier, you'll get an update. It just won't update the OS, but it'll add all the firmware updates for your device. That is the difference between the two. So Microsoft's not going to make something that's a beta that widely available. They're just not going to do that unless it's it from a computer.
The app will be sent to my phone immediately. This is really exciting, Chris.
I'm on the edge of my seat.
this is where it's going to suck down my bandwidth. I'm barely going to be able to talk to you on Skype now.
Oh, wouldn't that be great? You just start.
It's working.
So, but just to point out, while you're doing that, a couple other features that they added, and some of them, these things are basics. Everybody has their feelings about the live tiles, but now you can put an image on the background of the live tiles, and it takes a little to get used to, because I put an image of my daughter back there, and it kind of makes a lot of the tiles transparent. But it's pretty cool once you get used to it, seeing that background image, which I think is awesome. And of course, one of the big features they put in aside from Cortana, is the notifications. I'm not a notifications guy. I never really thought it as a big deal. I haven't stopped using it since it's come out. It's pretty awesome. So
the notifications comes down in a sort of a list form, similar to how Android and iOS does, is it?
Correct. You drag it from the top and you get a list of different applications that have sent you recent notifications. Mm-hmm. You can pick and choose which apps are allowed to go into the notifications. But the cool thing is they have a quick task feature in there as well. Okay. And you can pick and choose which applications or which features are in the quick task, such as turning on Wi-Fi, turning on Bluetooth. And there's this new feature on the phone called Quiet Hours, which Rod Simmons, my cohort over at SMR Podcast, is loving. And essentially that allows you to tell the phone, you know, silence when I have a calendar event come up, only allow like my wife and whoever else I deem important enough to break through the quiet feature and actually do an audible alert. So I found that to be, really, really cool about the phone.
So that works entirely off of your calendar. It's not that you actually have to specify "Do not disturb me now."
Correct. Right, it's off the calendar. So if you have a calendar event and it's marked busy, so if your calendar event is marked busy, it'll put the phone in quiet mode. And it was pretty cool because I was I was typing out a message, and you know the keyboard was clacking away, and then all of a sudden the keyboard just shut off, and I couldn't hear anything. I was like, "What the heck happened to my phone?" And I looked saw it was at 1:30 and I was like, oh, I'm late for my meeting. And I had to jump off the message and jump into my meeting. So I thought that was awesome that right at 1:30, it shut off the keyboard sound and it was completely quiet. And that told me immediately, stop texting, dummy, and get back to work. So I actually appreciate that feature. I thought that was pretty awesome.
That is cool. I don't think, Allison, do you know if the Do Not Disturb feature has any kind of auto enabling like that? I don't really use it.
I have not seen it. No, I use it, but like right now, I'm shown as busy on my calendar. I had to actively turn on Do Not Disturb.
Oh, okay.
You can set it for specific times and things like that, but it's not the same as doing it automatically. That's actually pretty cool.
You can actually set it for specific times as well as turn it on manually as a quick task. So I can just tap the button and say quick hours, quiet hours, and it automatically turns that on as well. So I thought that was pretty cool. That they added that feature in there.
Very cool.
They also changed this for Windows. I don't know if you have any Windows Phone fans that listen to the show, but if you do, they actually changed the screenshot, and it's taken me forever to get used to it. Screenshotting used to be the Windows key plus the power button. Now it's the power button plus the volume up. I don't know why they changed it, but they did. So I just want to throw that tip out there for folks that that use it. Another cool thing they added, which we didn't have before, believe it or not, is a speed dial function.
Okay.
So they actually, under your phone settings now, they added a speed dial as well as adding in they changed the layout of the phones, which I never really liked the way the phone was laid out when you're in a call, but they actually changed that now. That's going to take some getting used to for folks because the end button is towards the bottom. And if you hold your phone improperly, you'll end up hanging up on somebody, which is what I did earlier. Sorry. So that's another thing they laid out. So those are some of the cool features that I wanted to throw out there real quick. So far, it's been great. Cortana's been great asking her questions. It is a pretty sizable update, too. So if you don't have a lot of space on your phone, you're probably going to have to end up removing some applications to free up some of that space before you get it going. So just a caution that you may have to do that. Certain apps back up, like WhatsApp, it'll back up. And so you can blow your settings back down. So just a heads up there for folks that maybe. And now also the new podcast app from Microsoft is available. So I've been picking through that. So before, they had music and videos kind of tied into one of the tiles, and they've separated it out. And not only now have they separated it out, now they're completely separate applications that they can update independently. So along with that, they broke the podcast piece out of the music and made it its own application. It's fairly basic, but it's more functional already than the built-in podcasting that was in Windows Phone previously. With the ridiculous that it wasn't there, but happy it's there now, the ability to add podcasts directly from RSS feeds.
Okay.
So imagine going all these years and if it wasn't in the store, you couldn't listen to the podcast. So, but there are some, of course, some other great podcasting apps out there. So I'm looking, the features I'm really looking forward to is the deep integration into applications. So you can already say, ask Cortana to check you in via Foursquare. You can ask Cortana to make you to do a Skype call for you. But I'm waiting to see some of these other applications that I use from day to day be integrated as well into the UI and into interfacing with the phone. So, this is probably the biggest things that I've seen so far just by using the phone over the last couple of hours. They've made the density of the screen better, so you can actually have more tiles on the screen and some of the phones. There's an Internet Explorer reading view. They actually changed the font too on the phone too. It looks a lot crisper to me and a lot easier to read. So those are the things that I've come across so far. As far as the Windows Phone 8.1 update is concerned. So they changed the layout of the store too. That is pretty awesome how they really relayed out the store. It's a lot more user friendly, and they've taken up a lot of that space.
Hey, Chris, I also dropped into the show notes. I don't know how detailed you guys go, but a link to a video that Steve Sheridan posted earlier today. It's a YouTube video that compares Cortana, Siri, and Google Now. It's pretty cool. It's pretty interesting. They're shockingly similar. Some win some parts of it and some win others, but it's a nice little comparison to see how they work.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. That was done by Daniel Rubino, who runs WP Central over there. So it was a pretty cool video he did. Except I don't know the guy. I've never met the guy. He does a great job with the site. I definitely use the site. But that spin around and point he did maneuver in the beginning of that video, I just want to give him a shin kick for that maneuver. That was ridiculous. Spin around in the chair. Hi. I was like, oh, God, come on, stop it. Stop it.
Right, we will put the link to that in the show when it goes live as well, so you can see that video and see the
hot news.
Share spin. Yes, please.
You've the Windows Store isn't available at the moment. Oh. It's knackered. It says it on the Microsoft answers.microsoft.com site. Windows Phone Marketplace unavailable in some regions. Customers in some markets may be unable to access the Windows Phone Store. So I can't install anything.
Oh, well, that's good timing, James, because it's time for do your story. So I was going to skip over you because you're probably still going to be playing with your new Windows Phone.
I'll tell you what, it's only going to be a very brief story. I was looking at the Galaxy S5 launch over the last week, and apparently in some markets it was in the first week of launch, it was like twice what S4 was in some. And I've taken a look at the two phones. And all right, so one's a bit faster. The S5 is waterproof and it's got the little fingerprint thing that they nicked off Apple. But apart from, what is it? Why are people buying the Galaxy S5? I really can't work it out. Is it that much better a phone than the previous one? Or is it, I think Chris was alluding it to it earlier. You go into a shop and say, can I have the latest Galaxy phone, please? You know what I mean? Is it I really don't understand what's going on? No, is it brand loyalty?
I think it's an element of that. I've not seen a Galaxy S5 in the wild yet, but then I have pretty much been at home or in San Francisco for the last month, so I probably wouldn't have seen them. But
well, it's also hard to tell a difference between that one and the S4, apart from being a little bit bigger. They're almost identical.
I mean, a friend of mine, he was on the Pocket Show. I think he was on with you actually, maybe 4 weeks ago, 5 weeks ago, and he has jumped up and got the S5 just because he's, you know, he buys a new Galaxy phone every year. He's in technology, he's an Android fan, and all that kind of stuff. So I guess it's the same reason that people went from the 5 to the 5S when you talk about the iPhone as well. I mean, yes, there was improvements, but in the same sense, was it that much of an improvement?
I was going to say, you say it tends to be from the 4S to the 5S because that's how the sort of the contract rotations go. Is it people coming to the end of their contract getting an upgrade?
Maybe because there's a lot of S3s still out there, so maybe a lot of people skipped the S4. I still see a lot of S3s kicking about.
This is the point, I guess. It's
the remarkable
S4 did
not how sell
many
that per- well.
No, there were some perfectly reasonable Galaxy S3 phones, which I think, you know, why buy a new one? It's like people don't replace their PCs very often nowadays or their laptops. You can get 5 years out of a PC and it'll still
be good.
Like,
good enough now.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I'm wondering, are we at that stage with phones yet? Are they going, is it this whole 3D waterproof touch fingerprints? Are they just trying to sort of add bits to a phone to make it one sort of head forward beyond the, you know, a couple of noses ahead of the opposition or the previous version? I don't really know understand what the driver is to get a new phone now.
It's a good question.
It's still got enough of the coolness factor smartphones do where folks want to have the latest and greatest. It's just, you know, because you can ask that same question across every phone. I mean, when the new iPhone drops, there's lines, you know, like these can't be this, you know, this one just came out last year. Why are these so many people in line? But they pull it off every year, and these Galaxy phones are hitting that level. So it's still enough for folks to walk around with the phone and as a kind of a social thing. You know, I got the latest and greatest. That's the way I see it.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. It's
I think there's a degree of equalization going on. I think, for example, there's this. They're going to be the K or something that's going to be announced soon. I mean, it's arguably the Lumia 1020 has got the most fantastic camera. The photos coming off it are amazing. And it's going to take Android a little while to be able to get up to that level. But once all the phones are at that level, all as brilliant as each other, what's to choose between them? And how on earth are they going to where do they go from there?
That's why it's so important for these guys. And that's why, you know, for us, yeah, as much as I'm still confused about Amazon building a smartphone, it makes sense. You got to have the platform to back it up. You got to have the movies. You got to have the videos. You got to have the apps. You got to have the games, you know, in there. You got to have the other services that are important. You know, people might want to poo-poo the ability to do Office on a Windows phone, but I use it all the time. I've sat into I had to do a presentation that I wrote in PowerPoint, and I needed to edit it, and I did it on my phone. Before I did the presentation, it blew, and the update that I'd made blew back down to my tablet, which was I had to hand my computer in with the presentation on it, and I couldn't touch it because they didn't want anything to happen. So the only way for me to update it was through my phone, and I did that. You know, so yeah, there are people who use these type of services, you know, Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and whatever, if you use in Google Docs. But being able to do those type of things from your devices are important. So you got to have an ecosystem backing up your platform. And that's what I think where all the decisions will have to come.
Is
based on the ecosystem.
I think so. I think it's... It has to happen there, but I think the manufacturers need to be seen to be bringing out a new phone every single year. And they're still going to get the few people, well, not the few people, a lot of people buying them just purely for the I've got the latest phone type thing.
Yeah.
But none of the extra features are necessarily going to get used. Certainly the folk that I've spoken to that had S4s, they never used some of the, you know, the features that if you look away, the movie stops. If you read down at the bottom of the page, it scrolls up, all that kind of stuff. Didn't use any of those kind of things, but interesting. So Alison, you don't want to do your story. You feel completely outdone by Chris and,
I hate to say this, and Chris will quote me, but Windows Phone is more interesting than iOS this week. There's nothing big, nothing interesting. I'd rather do pics.
Yeah, I have to admit, that's possibly why we ended up with the battery story in Facebook in the news, because there really wasn't very much to talk about. But,
yeah.
I think I got a new ringtone.
You'll definitely play it for the SMR podcast, I'm sure.
Okay. The other thing that I just want to mention before we go into pics is the British Tech Network... the British Tech Network Patreon fund. If you've been listening to the Big Show or the Mac Show and also the Gamer Show last week, you will know that we have a Patreon fund now going. And the way that we are kind of hoping to kind of get you to jump on board with that is to just think about it as a dollar effectively equates to 60 pence in the UK. So if you just listen to the Pocket Show, and we do, when I get round to it, two a month, do you think you're getting 30 pence worth of entertainment out of this? Now,
no.
I know a lot
no,
of you probably
really.
Will say no, no. And that's absolutely fine. So do it for the rest of the network. Don't do it for my shows. No, but in all seriousness, it's the value for value model. If you like what you hear, we don't get the other two sponsors. They're great guys and we love them. But basically, they just take costs away. UK2 takes away the cost of our hosting. Network Union takes away the cost of our broadband. It doesn't actually provide us with anything for like all the kit and everything like that for doing all the shows and the streaming, the video cameras and whatnot. So just... if you think it's worth it, value for value, please chuck us some cash. The nice thing about it is, as well, there is a massive swag bag of goodies that if you listen to the tail end of the Mac Show, I don't have a list of the goodies here because they're all Ewan's, but he reckons there's about $300 worth of goodies in this swag bag that came back from Macworld. In fairness, they're mainly iPhone and Mac-centric. There is some things in there to delight...
Well, they should be.
Well, indeed.
I mean, why
came
not?
From Macworld as well. there is some things in there that your Windows Phone, your Android Phone user will be able to use and enjoy. But there is it's quite Mac and iPhone centric. But if you are a Patreon subscriber, we will be choosing one of you at random to win that swag bag in, I believe it's 3 weeks in the Mac Show, so it'll be 2 weeks on Friday to win that swag bag. So head on over to patreon.com/British Tech Network and please chuck whatever you think it's worth. And if you can't afford anything, you don't feel that it's worth anything, that's absolutely fine. We're not going to stop you listening to the show. We love you all the same. So thank you very much. Now, finally, we have went way over an hour just because it's been that much fun. And it was very interesting to hear about Windows Phone 8.1 and stuff there as well. So, but we're just going to finish up now with our cool things. So, Alison, would you like to start us off with a pick this week?
I really would. One of the best things I saw at Macworld was Cloak 2 from getcloak.com. And it's a... it's a VPN service that is incredibly inexpensive and works incredibly well. You know how with backups, back when you had to remember to do anything, you never did it? and you made all kinds of mistakes. You forgot to do it and everything. And now that everything's all automated, it's really easy and you actually get it done. The same thing is true with the way Cloak works. So you install it on your phone, on your tablet. Now, I only know the iOS and Mac stuff. Maybe you guys can check while I'm yapping whether it's available for anybody else. But it's on the Mac, the iPhone, and the iPad. And you install the software. You pay once for a monthly fee, or you can buy it. You can buy it a la carte. You can say, I just want a week of, I want to buy a cup of internet, of VPN. So you install it on your phone and you tell it what your trusted networks are. So my home network's called Tall Dart. I tell it Tall Dart is trusted. Nothing else is trusted. So we walked into Starbucks and our phones flipped over to VPN automatically.
Nice.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So this,
yeah,
this service is only $4 a month to be able to walk in and never have to even think about it, to have yourself protected with a virtual private network for that small of amount of money. I am really impressed. It was so easy to set up. I built my own home VPN server, and I found myself this week having to fix the OpenSSL bug from Heartbleed.
Right.
For crying out loud. Mm-hmm. It's like, that's not worth $4 a month. It took me hours to fix it. So
that's really cool. Can you pretend that VPN's in a different country as well?
I don't know that it's designed to do that, to do the VPN tunneling so that you, I mean, I, you know, that's a great question. That'd be something fun to try. Mm. I hadn't even thought about that. Yeah. So that I could be in Britain and actually get BBC shows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I am in Britain and I never watch BBC shows. I shouldn't say that to James, actually. He's an ex-BBC employee.
I used to be. Yeah. Absolutely. Yes. Pay your license fee, etc.
I would love to pay my license fee. Can I? Would you let me, please? That would be awesome.
Honestly, you could watch my BBC. I don't watch a single thing the BBC provides. So you could see all the stuff I don't watch.
I think come to some arrangement.
Come on, Sherlock. Come on.
No, I
yeah.
It's kind of weird. Bizarrely, we could actually do something quite interesting here because everything that I watch is from the States. All my sports from the States, all my TV shows are from the States, everything like that. I don't watch anything UK-based. Well, actually, except for Top Gear. Top Gear is the only UK-based thing. And QI, sorry, as well. Only two things. Anyway, sorry, I kind of went off there a wee bit, but that'd be interesting. Because at the moment, I pay $5 a month for a VPN service purely to be in America. So if that could do it for $4 and also give me that extra support
And on all your devices.
Like that, on all my devices, yeah. That'd be interesting. I will look into that. Thank you very much for that. So it's $4 a month. Getcloak.com. GetCloak.com. James, what do you have for this evening?
Well, to be honest with you, the conversations we've been having about password changes and stuff, I've got to go through all my passwords and change them one at a time. From what you guys have been saying about LastPass, for $12 a year for the subscription service, that is amazing. What I've been using up to now, however, has been a free solution because I'm a bit of a cheapskate. I don't like to have to pay anything unless I have to. And I quite like Password Safe, which is a Windows application that there is an Android equivalent of, and you can use, basically it's called PASSWD Safe for Android, and it opens the same file as your Windows one. And then I use a piece of software called DropSync, which syncs my Dropbox, folder in my Dropbox from my Windows PC to my Android phone. And it basically does exactly what LastPass does beautifully, except for free. And so those two pieces of software working together. Of course, now I've got a Windows phone. I've got to find something that can do all three. And LastPass does do all three. Mm-hmm. So
and remember,
if you want to keep it free.
It is free if you don't need the if you don't want to have the separate web browser. And you can log into it on your phone, just on your browser.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
It's exciting.
Mm. Yeah, but you should give them $12 a year because it's an amazing service. But anyway,
yeah, absolutely. I think it's I think the way ahead for applications is a handful of dollars a year because they get 10,000 people using it. They've made a good amount of money over the course of the year that will help with the development. And for us, it's what it's three cups of coffee. So over a course of a year, I couldn't limit myself to three cups of coffee a year. So it's only fair. So, yes, we'll stick them in the show notes for the free way to go thing, but I think LastPass should be my pick, as well as Windows Phone 8, both of which I will install on my Windows phone as soon as the store opens up again. It's not just me who's got the problem. I did a search for the error message on Twitter, and it's a bit broken at the moment. Worst possible time. We're going to have to do the podcast some other time, Chris, because otherwise, you know, you can tell me all these fantastic things, and I can't do them.
I'll be back anytime you'll have me.
You will be very welcome as well. But do you have a pick for us this evening, or is it Windows 8.1?
No. I have a separate pick because I'm that happy. This is a pick that I'm going to make because I know a lot of folks listening to this show have got to be home, work out of home. It's just trend going on. I don't know. I work from home for my day job. And one of the things that I have to do is I use a soft phone, which is basically instead of having a corporate phone that's sitting on my desk, it's on the computer. But I also do link calls to colleagues. But I also use my cell phone as well. And being able to conduct all these phone calls, it can be a pain because Link, you got your speaker and your microphone over here, or you got some USB headset plugged into your computer over there. And then if you want to take a phone call on your cell phone, you grab your cell phone and your Bluetooth headset. And I needed to solve that problem. And the Logitech H800 is an awesome wireless headset that can both connect to your computer via a USB adapter that goes into your one of your USB ports, and can also do Bluetooth pairing to your cell phone. Nice. So that you can switch between the devices via a switch behind your ear as to which one you want to talk on. For me, this is hugely important because I may start a phone call with my boss via Link, hang up with him, and I tell somebody else, hey, call me on my cell phone, or I have my cell phone which forwards calls to my cell phone. So, but some meetings they want to handle through Link. So I needed to be able to bridge the audio between the two in a way, not so that they're at the same time, but make it easier for me to switch. I don't have to put down one headset and talk on a microphone, or pick up my Bluetooth headset when I want to talk on my cell phone. This thing does both. It's a stereo headset. On the right side, it has a boom microphone that you can fold up if you know you need a microphone and just listen to music. But you can it has it's chargeable. You can actually use it while it's being charged as well. It has the microphone mute on the right-hand side, volume up, volume down, play, pause, and answer phone call and hang up on the right-hand side. On the left-hand side is a really interesting piece on the outside of the speaker, was where you can just turn a little semi-quarter turn, and it's actually a compartment to hold the adapter that goes into your PC. So if you need to travel with these things, you can take that adapter out, open up the side of the headset on the left-hand side, stick the adapter in there so you can make sure you always have it with you. So if you work from home or you do a lot of VoIP calls from your PC, but you also want to do stuff from your cell phone as well, check out the Logitech H800. You can find them on Amazon for about $60, or you can find them in your local I found they're also available like in Best Buys and stuff like that as well. So that's my pick for you guys.
Cool. Yeah, I just checked it. It's Amazon UK for £62.99.
Wow, that's not bad.
Yeah, that sounds quite good. Very good. Of course, it's $65 US, so technically that should be about £40 for us, but it doesn't work like that.
And there is two models. I should say that there is a lower model. I think it's the 600 that just does PC stuff, but they're both wireless. So just make sure if you want the Bluetooth and the PC, make sure you get the 800.
Very nice. Yeah, very nice indeed. Cool. My pick this evening is Monument Valley for iPhone and iPad. It is a I put this in as a pick and then I completed it yesterday and I was a little disappointed, but I will tell you about the pick in the first place. So it's Monument Valley. It's a fun little kind of geometric puzzle game. It's beautiful as well, the animation and the kind of shading and things like that, and it's absolutely gorgeous. It's £2.49, which is quite pricey for a game, $3.99 in the American iTunes store. And I was absolutely loving the game, except it finished far too short, and I was quite disappointed. I kind of felt for much as it was beautiful and it was well made, and you could tell that a huge amount of time had went into developing this, I kind of wanted more than 10 levels, especially when you're paying £2.50 for it. I wouldn't say that should push you away from it. It's still a good game. It's still a good recommendation, I think, to go and pick it up as something a little bit different rather than plethora of, I've forgotten what you call it now, that bird game, Flappy Bird, that's been out there. It's somebody doing something a little bit different. But yeah, a little disappointed it only had 10 levels. But you never know. They might bring out another 10 or something like that as an update in the future. But that's my Monument Valley for the iPhone and the iPad. Now, all that's left for me to do is to thank my fantastic panel this evening for joining us. It has been a blast. I have thoroughly enjoyed the past hour and 50 minutes of my life. So very, very quickly, just before we close up, can we just quickly tell us where we can get hold of you all? James, where can the lovely people of the internet find you?
I still stumble around Twitter quite a lot. S-Y-Z-Y-G-Y, that's Syzygy on Twitter.
Great. Chris, where can people find you?
If you want to find me, you can check me every week on the SMR podcast. You can check us out on smrpodcast.com. It's three of my friends, or two of my friends, the three of us. We're just really real friends talking about tech. It's probably one of the funnest podcast shows you'll ever listen to. So check us out. You can also catch me on Twitter at Big Chris Ashley. That's my Twitter handle.
Cool.
I would second what he said. It is one of the funnest shows you'll ever listen to, even if they might get off topic a little bit, but now they've just declared everything's on topic, so that's good.
That's how we fixed our topics right there.
And Allison, finally, where can people find you?
Well, I can be found at podfeet.com, and the name of the show is the No Silicast, and I'm on Twitter at podfeet. Pretty active on the Twitters there.
Very good. And lots of great coverage from Macworld there as well. I know some of your videos going up. Good work there.
Yeah, I just posted about 10 more while Chris was yapping about Windows Phone there.
You recorded 10 more and posted them. You can find me on Twitter. I'm at Paul Wheatley. You can also find me on The Gamer Show on this network, where me and two friends basically just blabber about everything that's going on in the world of Twitter. And occasionally the conversation does go on to some fairly interesting topics, but all good. If you want to get in contact with us, please email us britishtechnetwork@gmail.com. If you want to send us any feedback or anything like that, please do so through iTunes. I would love to get some feedback. We don't actually have anything on there just now because we're just new, brand new. But if you could head over there and give us some reviews or something like that, that would be much appreciated. So that's us. Thank you very much, folks. It's been awesome. I will see you again in 2 weeks. Good night.